Welcome to CenturyLink Conferencing. Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the sixth person to join the meeting.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve Ward with the Secretary of State's office. We'll be beginning today's meeting about 5 minutes or so late, so just stick with us. We'll be starting in about 5 minutes. Thanks.
Hello, this is Neil McBurnett.
Hi, Neil. Steve Ward with the Secretary of State's office. We're all here. We're just going to be starting about 5 minutes late or so today.
Great. Are you going to be sharing any screens during this, or is it just audio?
Looks like our system indicates that we are currently sharing a screen.
So is it just the screen that shows the GoToWebinar info?
Correct.
Great. Okay. It felt recursive that way. Good. No problem.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Is that Philip?
Yes, sir.
Harvey's here from San Diego.
Mark Lindemann is here.
Good morning, everyone. This is Ed Smith with Clear Ballot.
This is Ron Revest. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started here in just 1 minute. We'll be right back with you. Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started. Again, good morning. This is an informal conference of the Risk Limiting Audit Representative Group. This is a public meeting held in accordance with sections 1-7-515 and 24-4-103 sub 2 of the Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is January 4, 2018, and the time is 10 o'clock a.m. Mountain Standard Time. We are meeting in the Aspen Conference Room on the third floor of the Office of the Secretary of State at 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. My name is Dwight Shellman. I'm the County Support Manager for the Elections Division of the Secretary of State's Office. I'm convening this meeting in accordance with the notice published on December 28, 2017. And before I go on, let me just make a record of other members of Secretary of State's staff who are in the room with me today. We have Josh Johnson, who is our SCORE data export guru. That is one of the issues that will arise today. Stephen Bowie is our campaign finance manager, but he's also an awesome program and project manager. So he's joining with us today because we are going to be discussing software development requirements gathering later today. And then we also have voting systems manager Jesse Romero. This meeting is convened to facilitate an exchange of views by members of the representative group concerning the manner of conducting risk-limiting audits of primary and general elections featuring statewide, multi-county, and county-wide ballot contests, and how to enhance or further develop the Secretary of State's risk-limiting audit software to achieve those objectives. The views and recommendations of the RLA representative group may inform the creation of additional software development requirements and administrative rulemaking proceedings pertaining to risk-limiting audits. This meeting is being audio recorded, and also it's being broadcast over the internet. In addition, some members of the public and representative group are participating remotely via webinar and conference call. This morning, we posted on the RLA representative group page webinar registration and conference call information. So for those just listening to the webcast, if you would prefer to actually join the webinar and join the telephone conference call, you're welcome to do so. And again, that's on the RLA representative group page of the Secretary of State's website. In addition, on the same page of the website, we have posted several written comments that we received in advance of today's meeting and some other materials, and we will be reviewing all of that during our informal conference today. Let me just recite the members of the representative group and members of the public who are present here today. Jennifer Morrell from Arapahoe County, Eric Coomer from Dominion Voting Systems, Kyle, and I always mispronounce your name, Ruley, it's not that hard. Kyle Ruley and Elaine Meyer from Douglas County are the members of the public in addition to the Secretary of State staff members I mentioned earlier. If I could take a roll call of the representative group members who are participating by conference call. And if you'll give me 1 second. What did I do? Great. Again on line two. Okay. We'll be back. 1 second. I forgot to print out my public notice, so I'm just going to look at it on the web. Pam Bacon, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, Dwight. Thank you.
Thank you. Lori Mitchell, Chaffee County?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Matt Crane, are you on the phone? No. Matt has designated Jennifer Morrell as his representative. Hillary Hall, Boulder County Clerk and Recorder?
I am on the phone.
Janice Voss Caudill, or another representative from Pitkin County?
Hi, Dwight. Janice couldn't be here, so Kelly McNicholas Curry and Greg McPherson are on the line.
Thank you. Philip Stark?
Present somewhere.
Thanks. Ron Revest?
Yes, online.
Thank you. Mark Lindemann?
I'm here.
Eric Coomer is representing Dominion Voting Systems today. Ed Smith or another representative of Clear Ballot Group?
Yes, right. This is Ed. I'm on the line.
Great, Ed. Thanks. Harvey Branscombe, I think, is not able to join us today, but I may be wrong.
In fact, I'm here at the moment. I'm on the phone at the moment.
Thank you, Harvey. Neil McBurn?
Hi, I'm here. Thank you, Dwight.
Thank you. And I've already mentioned the representatives from the Colorado Secretary of State's office. And I'll just mention for the record that Amber and Jimmy Flanagan have joined us in person here on behalf of the City and County of Denver. Okay. So just to ensure that the webcast is clear and audible, if I could just ask everybody to speak loudly and clearly. If you're physically present here, please speak into one of the microphones and someone will bring it around to you if you want to speak. If you're on the phone, please do your best to speak as audibly and clearly as possible. And one thing I'll ask anybody who's participating on the phone, please, please don't put us on hold. If you need to leave the phone call, just hang up and call back in, because otherwise we get horrible elevator music and none of us can speak with one another. Okay. So the agenda items for today were fairly generic, but we basically just want to exchange views on how to conduct risk-limiting audits for, first of all, for a primary election, understanding that not all Colorado counties that will conduct the primary election in June will be utilizing a voting system that is capable of exporting ballot-level cast vote records. And what that means is that any statewide contest or multi-county contest will have to be audited perhaps using different audit methodologies, comparison audit versus ballot polling audit, or another method so that we can audit statewide contests in a statistically valid way when not every county has. So that's the first issue, and I think there are two separate issues there. One is primary elections are different than general elections. They're just different. What, if anything, do we need to do to accommodate that? Two, we need to confront the issue that we kind of dodged last year because there was no statewide ballot issue. Now we need to confront it and deal with it. Secondly, how do we conduct a risk-limiting audit for the general election in November? Again, based on the understanding that not all counties use a voting system capable of exporting cast vote records. We've received some written comments, and I'm going to open those up in just a minute and invite the authors of those comments to maybe take us through them. They're a little dense and complex, and I would appreciate just a verbal explanation. But let me just note in our materials today, there are two items that were submitted by Harvey Branscombe, which in I've posted them because that's what we do. But in substance, these comments really pertain to issues surrounding the transparency of risk-limiting audits as they are currently conducted in the counties and administered by the Secretary of State. It also addresses some voter anonymity issues that arise in particular connection with risk-limiting audits, and Harvey's viewpoints on the Colorado Open Records Act guidance that the Secretary of State issued after the risk-limiting audit was completed in order to provide some guidance to the counties on what redactions, if any, needed to be made to cast vote records and ballot images. Those issues, undoubtedly important, are really beyond the scope of the agenda items for today. And I separately informed Harvey that I really do think they merit a completely separate meeting of this group and the public. And I will discuss that with the secretary to set those up. So Harvey's comments are posted, but I don't expect to be able to address them in detail today. So before we go on to the question of how do we risk limit or conduct a risk limiting audit of a primary election with both legacy and cast vote record systems, I wanted to just provide a document that I hope, explains the scope of the problem here. And that is not coming up. Well, that's not good. I will have that posted. That's why I brought my handy little thumb drive. Give me one second. For some reason, the link to this document on our page is broken. I will get that fixed, obviously, but in the meantime, I can just show you this document.
Which one are you bringing up, Dwayne?
It's the top document in today's table. It's just called Voting Systems Public. It's an Excel document.
The link actually worked for me.
Well, that's probably just my good luck. Okay. Okay. Basically, what this document. The name of the county, the number of active electors for purposes of the 2016 general election. I'm using that number because that is the same number that counties use to determine the number of VSPCs, or voter service and polling centers, that must be open. I identify the voting system provider, and on that basis, I identify for each county the kind of RLA, or risk limiting audit, they will be able to conduct this year. There are some counties that are either in the process or about to make acquisitions of new voting systems, and I'm assuming that all of those acquisitions will receive the approval of their board of directors and will be approved by this office. I think those are fairly safe assumptions. So, sorry guys, I gotta move this.
Grab it at the top, just above the orange, and slide it across.
Thank you. So I just prepared a pivot table here that shows the percent of the active electorate that are in counties that can conduct a particular type of risk-limiting audit. And you can see that over 98% of the active electorate, based on 2016 numbers, are in counties that can conduct a comparison audit. 1.7% are in counties that can conduct a ballot polling audit. And then we have less than 0.1% of counties that actually hand tabulate their ballots. And so at this juncture, since they're not using a tabulation system, a risk limiting audit is not required for them. So I just wanted to provide this document to indicate the scope of this problem, which is to somehow incorporate ballot polling audits into comparison audits statewide. And the other thing I'll mention is that this problem or issue will diminish over time, as we still have a few counties out there that want to upgrade or modernize their voting system. They're not going to do it this year. Frankly, I expected them to do it 2019 at the very latest, early 2020. So ultimately, in the next couple of years, every county that uses a voting system will be able to conduct a comparison audit. We're almost all the way there, but not quite.
Dwight?
Yes.
This is Neil McBurnett, and I just wanted to suggest that the counties that do hand counts, you know, some people would really love to see them also do a check of their hand count, but certainly in the case of a statewide audit, we need to include their totals, and we need to somehow include them in the risk limiting audit of the full state. So, and that can be, there are a bunch of different ways to do that and assumptions we can make, but I just wanted to say that when they're involved in multi-county audits, we probably have to deal with them somehow, right?
Thanks, Neil. And as I said, when we first formed this group in January of last year, this just has to be an iterative process. there's no requirement that those counties participate in a risk-limiting audit right now. But obviously, ballots cast in those counties have to be taken into account in the diluted margin for a statewide contest or a multi-county contest. So we agree there. And, you know, whether or not they will be ultimately required to conduct some type of post-election audit, even though they're hand-tabulating ballots, I think is an open question that we're probably not going to resolve this year.
Yep.
Okay. So
this is Philip. Just as a matter of statistics or math, if we're treating those counties as if their counts are perfect, then the way to audit the rest is to subtract the results from tabulated in those counties from any contest-wide results that for contests that span their counties and all or part or all of one or more other counties, and then audit the remaining counties as if the margin were what's left over after subtracting off the known bit.
Okay. Thank you. So, Philip, just on that point, let me ask, on a for a statewide contest, rather than including the ballots cast in those hand count counties in the diluted margin, we would subtract ballots cast in those counties from total ballots cast and then calculate the diluted margin, right?
You would subtract the the votes for each candidate cast in those counties from the overall results in the contest, producing a smaller contest with a different margin. And then the denominator in calculating the diluted margin for the audit of that remaining portion of the contest would be the pool of ballots from which the sample is to be drawn, which would not include those hand count counties.
Philip, this is Ron. I think you're perhaps making the assumption there that the winner doesn't change when you subtract off the hand count counties?
Yes. It could be a negative margin that you're auditing to. It's the remainder of the contest. Yeah.
Okay.
We should probably defer this, but there are a number of ways to handle it, and we've got much bigger things probably to focus on first.
Okay. So what I'd like to do is open up the bottom document posted for today's meeting, Notes on Statistics for 2018 Colorado Primaries. This was submitted, it's kind of a collective effort, as I understand it, from Mark Lindemann, Ron Rivest, Philip Stark, and Neil McBurnett. Others have contributed to
it. Forgive me for interrupting. Dwight, you got much quieter a couple minutes ago. Is there a volume increase on your side possible?
Okay. Is this better?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This was submitted by I'll call them the academic members of the representative group. I confess that I read this pretty thoroughly last night, and I am not at all sure that I understand it. So, the question in my mind is for a primary election. So ordinarily, when we do a risk-limiting audit, we randomly select ballots which may or may not contain the audited contest or the target contest or the contest that is driving the audit. I understand that concept in the context of a general election, but it makes very little sense to me if the secretary, you know, hypothetically selects the Democratic governor's race in a primary election as the audited contest, why we would ever ask a county audit board to examine a Republican Party ballot style that simply does not contain that contest. And that is what I mean when I say primary elections are tabulated in the same database on the voting system, but they are truly separate elections. So that's the concept I'm trying to get my head around.
This is Philip speaking. So I think that it's easier to think about a primary. A primary is not one election. It's elections for each party that take place on the same day. Or it's not one contest. It's a contest for each party that happens to take place on the same day. And it's no different from any other contest in which only some voters are eligible to vote. Really, the big difference is that in any particular piece of geography, some voters will be eligible and some voters will not, whereas generally eligibility is determined by geography for other types of contests. So I don't think it's a primary, it's the primaries. And the issue is simply, if we had a way to select ballots from only a contest of interest, for example, say the Democratic primary, that then we could target the sampling more efficiently and only select ballots that contain that contest as part of the audit of that contest. That's no different from auditing a mayoral contest, which appears on only a fraction of the ballots cast in a particular county. If we had a way to draw a sample from only those ballots, that would add to the efficiency of the audit, although it would have some downsides in that we wouldn't have as many contests available to audit opportunistically. So I think that what's confusing is that we think of the primary as the primary rather than the primaries, and in fact it's the primaries. And there's really no difference in auditing a contest that appears on only some of the ballots, whether that happens to be a contest run by a particular party or a contest that cuts across the electorate.
Yes.
So this takes us back to the issue of, do we have information that would allow us to draw a sample from, say, only ballots that contain the Democratic primary?
Hey, Philip, this is Jennifer Murrell. So are you suggesting that we would filter our ballot manifest and our CVR by ballot type based on the contest and submit them separately for each party?
No, I'm not suggesting a way to work around this. I'm suggesting a way to think about it. There's a number of ways to work around it. One way to work around it in counties like Arapahoe that have cast vote record data is to combine score data with the cast vote records, ensure that the number of ballots of a given ballot type, as implied by the cast vote records, jibes with the score data for how many ballots there should be of each type or how many ballots should contain each particular contest. If we have that external touch point that is not depending on the vote tabulation system, then we can use the cast vote records to identify which ballots the voting system purports contain, for the sake of argument, the Democratic primary, and draw our sample from those. That would be a software issue. Free and Fair would need to, or someone would need to, augment that software so that it can say, I want to get the 1,912th ballot that contains the Democratic primary. That, according to the cast vote records, corresponds to this particular ballot in this particular box. We go and retrieve it. And if it's a good day, that ballot, in fact, does contain the Democratic primary, and the vote on that ballot corresponds to the cast vote record. If it's a bad day, that ballot doesn't, in fact, contain the Democratic primary, and we chalk up a discrepancy in the comparison audit.
So let me just I understand what you're saying, Philip. This is Dwight Shulman again. Let me just restate that in a slightly different way. We don't want, ordinarily in a risk-limiting audit, you do not want to rely on an artifact created by the very tabulation system you are auditing in order to reduce your sample. And for that reason, at least as suggested in this document, unless we have some other independent source of data where we can say, you know, Arapahoe County's cast vote record file says that there were 90,000 Democratic Party ballots cast in the primary, and score data that we can get independent of the tabulation system also says in Arapahoe County, 90,000 voters receive voting credit for voting a Democratic Party style, then we have some independent confirmation that we can rely on the CVR data, and then the software can, in making the random selection, in order to audit the Democratic contest, whatever it happens to be, it is then permissible for the software to filter out the random selection and target only those Democratic Party styles.
I would just clarify that slightly. We're not relying on the cast vote records in a way that we can't check. That having that external touchstone of score gives us a way of dealing with any errors that in the cast vote records that having to do with an error in the ballot style. So it's not that we are trusting the cast vote records to contain the right contest. It's we're checking whether they do in the course of the audit. And if they don't, if there's an error in the cast vote record that alters the ballot style, the audit has a good chance of continuing to escalate towards a full hand count if there are enough such errors to alter the outcome.
That's good. And this is Neil McBurnett. I just want to note that in particular, what we're checking via the independent data from SCORE is that we aren't filtering out paper ballots that actually do contain votes for the contest we're looking at. So, you know, the attack would be if somebody wanted to mess with the CVR and come up with a different result, they would just say, we're just going to ignore all those ballots, you know, we're going to modify the CVR and ignore a bunch of them. So we want an independent check that says, you know, not only are the ones that you see in the CVR, but there aren't any others. So it gives you that ability to filter exactly as you're saying, Dwight. I think we're all agreeing. I just wanted to kind of motivate the reason for the independent check.
Okay. Dwight, this is Eric from Dominion Voting. I just want to point out there's one other wrinkle with the new open primary statute, right? So if you've got a voter that gets both a Democratic and Republican, that data is not going to make it back into SCORE which one they set up or sent back necessarily, right?
Well, it's actually a requirement of the law that the county record that, but you're right that...
From a practical standpoint... That may not happen before the next primary.
No, it has to, actually. But the problem, Eric, I mean, it's still a good point. We have ordinarily, you know, SCORE is receiving ballots with known ballot styles in an automated sense and or way, and now we are interjecting a human element to the capturing of that data that may or may not be correct. So in that respect, you're completely correct. Amber?
Well, and I think on that, yes, we're going to have to record, but I think the problem we have is because of the two cards going to unaffiliateds, the mix-ups that could happen in households where somebody's affiliated and takes one of those and puts it in theirs, like we have no way of catching that unless we check every packet coming back in, even for party-affiliated voters. So that's the two-card thing is the part that's going to create the integrity issues for this. If it was something where it was everything was on one piece of paper that came back and we can then open that and we get everything back and we know that's coming back from the unaffiliated elector, whether they voted one side or the other, then we know that there isn't another card floating somewhere. Mm-hmm. But with this new concept, we don't have that assurance. But I wanted to ask Dwight, I guess for me, the SCORE stuff aside, I'm kind of wondering in a primary, like if the state selects a race and say it's governor, I would think that you would do both in a statewide scenario where you would do a risk limit on the Republican side, do one on the Democratic side, but then like within a county, if it was a countywide race, maybe that one gets picked and that's clerk or whatever it is that's countywide. But then in House districts or Senate districts, you could go specific to the party because we're already segregating by styles as it is in the cast vote record, right? So you could have multiple ways of selecting races, whether it's both parties involved or single party, right?
Well,
and you may want to do that because it would vary by county in terms of how far apart a race may or may not be.
This is Philip jumping in, forgive me. So I would hope that the Secretary of State would not select one major party's primary for audit and not the other, for only the reason that would look like it's partisan in some way. If he does select both major parties' primaries for audit, then virtually every ballot that you pull is useful for auditing either one contest or the other contest. And so there's not wasted effort in the same way as there is if half the ballots you pulled are not useful for auditing any contest you care about.
So the criteria for selecting the audited contest is in Rule 25.2. That hasn't changed from 2017. It says the Secretary will select at least one statewide contest and one countywide contest. Admittedly, the rule was not drafted specifically with primary elections in mind. I can't imagine that the Secretary would say, we're going to do a risk limiting audit of the Green Party and forget everybody else. I mean, that's just not going to happen. He's going to select both. But I think there's a couple issues that I'd like to explore on this. Number one is I guess I'd like the group's thought about the criteria for selecting the audited contests are set forth in the rule, and it pertains to the geographic scope of the contest, the closeness of the margin, the workload that its selection will impose on clerks and recorders, any considerations relating to opportunistic audits. I'm probably forgetting one, but those are generally the criteria. I personally don't think it makes a lot of sense for the Secretary to say, well, I'm selecting the Democratic governor, which has, you know, let's say it's a 5% undiluted margin, and so therefore I'm going to select the Republican governor, which may be just a blowout, or, you know, vice versa. I think I'm not sure that's necessary, and I'm not sure it's wise or prudent. Does anybody on the phone have thoughts about that?
Well, so if that doesn't happen, then I would say that isn't really a statewide contest. And I understand he's intending to select at least one statewide contest. The Democratic primary for something or other only appears on some of the ballots. It is not a statewide contest.
But that doesn't trouble me. I mean, I agree with Dwight that what the people are going to be interested in auditing is the tight contest. And, I mean, first of all, I think we can, I mean, certainly the software allows selecting multiple contests. I would hope that the rule could allow selecting multiple contests. And if that requires changes, I mean, I know you're doing lots of stuff, but that seems like a priority to me. But I would much rather have, you know, for example, an audit of a 5% contest for one office, governor in or whatever, in one party, and, you know, a 10% contest margin in a different contest for another party. I mean, it'd be if one party really doesn't have anything that the public, you know, that had a close margin, I would rather audit a bunch of stuff from ones that do.
This is Ron, if I could add a comment. Dwight, I understand your comments. I would suggest, though, that the contests that have wide margins really don't require much effort at all and might as well be included, as Philip suggests. I mean, they don't need to be audited, but in fact, they're not audited because the way the statistics works, the stopping rule says you stop after looking at 45 ballots or something. So I think there's not an issue there.
As long as we can select multiple contests, I agree entirely. And we should select, you know, all the ones that people care about. But if you're only going to select one, then make it interesting.
Agreed.
Okay, so let me follow up on that issue, because I may just not be understanding something. Let's assume that we select multiple contests. And just for purposes of this question, let's assume they're all statewide contests, governor, treasurer, attorney general, et cetera, on one or both major party ballots or any party ballot. If we select multiple contests, at least the software, I think, is currently developed, would basically require a separate random selection of ballots for each of those contests. But what I've heard from both Philip and Neil this morning is that's not necessarily so. You could use the same random selection of ballots and treat some or all of those statewide contests as the audited contest. If that is true, is it also true that the contest with the closest margin really determines the number of ballots that need to be examined?
So yes, if you select multiple contests, the contest with the closest fully diluted margin with the existing software, if we completely limit myself to the existing software, it will say, wow, I mean, I would say no, because it can evolve over the audit. If you have one tight race, tight margin, that will initially set the initial sample size. If you have a race with a wider margin, but it has a lot of discrepancies, it will take over. In the existing software, it'll handle that and say, wow, you know, the first sample size was for this tight race, but now, given the discrepancies we see in this other race, it's going to continue to drive the audit, and you'll have to continue picking more beyond, you know, even if there were no discrepancies in that first tighter contest. So, we would certainly hope that the software, that resources and time was available to develop software that would do much more targeted auditing. And this really gets back to your original concern, Dwight, that, you know, I mean, in the extreme, if you were to pick one of the Green Party or Libertarians or something, which when you delete their margin is going to be minuscule, that would be a very challenging thing to audit if you're auditing from a sample that is the full county. So if we can get software that does the two big lifts that is discussed in this document, one of them is driving things from the contest level and using score data to justify that, and the other is being able to handle multiple. That's more complicated when you're trying to do multiple contests, because for each contest you have to keep everything in mind and only count the ones that you really sampled on behalf of this contest. That's definitely a big lift, but that would be the most efficient way to audit things. If that's not feasible, either for the primary, which seems like a really tall lift, as you note in the RFI, or elsewhere, then it may be that we just, you know, if you were to pick, let's say, the governor race with a 5% margin on the Republican side and the Democratic's, you know, attorney general that had a 7% margin, that would work pretty well statewide because they were pretty similar margins. You would end up auditing the whole, essentially auditing the entire state to a 5% margin, and you'd get a little more confidence on the 7%. So that wouldn't be awful, but it doesn't help you in the more difficult legislative and other small district contests that are also of interest.
This is Ron. Maybe I could add a remark there. In response to your question, Dwight, I mean, you asked if you're driving several contests, driving the audit, whether you need to have separate sampling procedures for each of them and sort of not be able to share the work. But the key point is whether the populations from which you're sampling are the same or not. So, for example, if you have several Democratic statewide offices, I mean, you've got governor, maybe this isn't relevant exactly for the primary you have, but if you have the same population of ballots from which you're drawing, then drawing for one contest, you know, gives you the benefit of being able to draw from the other one the same. So you can do all of the contests that are statewide or, say, countywide if you're restricting that population. The question is, what are the populations you've got, and which contests share that population of ballots when you're doing the sampling? And to the extent they share, you know, you can have one contest driving it or all of them driving it or whatever, you're being able to synergize between the various sampling efforts there. So you know, I think identifying the populations is a key step in thinking about how the auditing is going.
Just to pile on what Ron is saying, but if you were treating the denominator, the pool of ballots, to be all the ballots cast in the relevant counties, then yes, one and the same sample can be used to audit all contests. That was one of the simplifications in the method that Colorado's auditing is based on. The paper from which it's drawing the map allows you to to audit any number of contests simultaneously using the same sample.
Yep.
This is Kelly. I'm sort of swimming hard to stay afloat here, and I just have some questions about, or just some concerns about the integration of the score data. And I just go procedurally as far as if that score data, if the ballot styles need to be in order the same way a CVR is, and also just with timing, because it seems like that would require that we would balance before the RLA.
So, Kelly, I'm not sure I understand your question. One more time.
I guess, well, I'm the one that's confused about how SCORE as an external measure, the data in SCORE as an external measure, in terms of the number of ballots received for each ballot style would be used. And if the SCORE data would have to preserve the order that each ballot style comes in the same way that the CVR preserves the order each ballot style was scanned, and then if we're using the numbers from SCORE, as an external counterpoint, it would seem we would have to balance our elections prior to the RLA, whereas our calendar currently isn't set up like that.
So
let me just jump in on the score yeah. question. So on the first one, what we're envisioning in this paper right now is only aggregate score data per county. So there wouldn't be an issue of, like, getting per envelope data in the same order as the paper. That would cause all kinds of problems. We have envisioned and someday continue to want to talk about ways of getting a manifest that really gives you score data on styles in a way that could better support everything else, but that's tricky, and that's not what's on the table right now.
Right now, the idea for the use of score data is simply that if the number of cast vote records that claim to contain, for the sake of argument, Democratic gubernatorial candidate, agrees with the number of CVRs that contain that contest agrees with the number that score says should, then if the CVRs have made a mistake in which particular ballots show it, we can pick that up as we sample those CVRs. We would note it. We would have a big chance of noticing if there's enough errors to alter the outcome of the contest. So it's really just aggregate information that gives a touchstone. It's not score data about each individual ballot. It's just knowing how many we ought to be able to find.
So in other words, Kelly, the concept that we're batting around here for this external independent verification data is simply, and I expect that we would do this via custom query from the Secretary of State's office, so this would not be a burden on the counties, but we would just pull out of SCORE a data file that says the first of all, associates basically every ballot contest on every ballot style in the state and tells us also how many of each ballot style were accepted for counting as of the date we do the RLA, understanding that, you know, the full reconciliation for Canvas hasn't yet happened. But just ignoring the unaffiliated voter issue at the moment, those numbers should generally be close to the ballot styles reflected in the CVR. And that's kind of the independent sanity check that I think Philip and Ron and Neil are talking about. They may not be exact, and in a general election, they will not ever be exact because of property owner ballots. But again, you know, we ought to be able to work our way through all of those issues. So it doesn't require you to balance your election by the RLA. We will just pull the data out of SCORE and see where we are and slap it up against the CVR and see if the numbers are, you know, not exact, but close.
Okay, thank you so much.
And I think we actually do a little better than that. I mean, the proposal is to essentially, if the numbers don't match well, or don't match exactly, then the amount by which they don't match might slightly increase the amount of auditing that needs to be done based on, you know, the procedures that are suggested there. So, you know, we wouldn't want to just kind of eyeball it and say, ah, they look pretty close. We'd want to say, well, it looks like this is what we should really expect. And the only thing we can do is limit, you know, the number of other ballots that might have this contest on it to this number. And so that may increase the amount of effort a little bit. And the closer you get, the better. That's the goal.
So, Neil, can you just expand on that? I'm sorry, I'm not scrolling through. But the notion of zombie ballots and zombie CVRs. This is absolutely the sexiest topic that's ever been raised in the context of risk-limiting audits. But if you can just explain that. If we have a CVR file that shows either more or less ballots of a particular style were counted than were accepted, how do we reconcile those?
Yeah, I think I would defer to Philip, who wrote the paper on this, with that in its title. And it was, it does help make this a little juicier.
So just full disclosure, the paper was rejected when we submitted it for publication. But the math for it is implicit in the SOBA paper as well. So the idea is this. Let's suppose that we trust the SCORE data and that according to SCORE, there are more ballots that contain the contest than we have cast vote records for. When we audit the contest, instead of sampling from 1 to the number of ballots, the 1 to the number of CDRs that contain the contest, we sample from 1 to the number of to the number of ballots that SCORE says should contain the contest. If we get a number of ballots, if we get a ballot that corresponds to one for which we have the CVR, we go and retrieve the corresponding physical ballot. We know what physical ballot is supposed to go with that CVR, and we audit it as usual. If we pull a number that corresponds to a ballot for which we don't have a cast vote record, then rather than going into the paper, we just pretend that there is a piece of paper that contains that contest and that that piece of paper contains a vote for every loser in the contest. That is, that piece of paper would have narrowed the margin in every contest.
Okay, that's so it. Let me just stop you there. How would it be possible for us to pull a paper ballot that does not have a corresponding CVR? We are no longer using the ballot manifest. We are using SCORE data as kind of an independent ballot manifest.
You're using a combination of the manifest and the number of ballots that don't have a CVR according to SCORE. So when we draw the sample, let's, for the sake of argument, suppose we've got 900 CVRs that contain contest X, and SCORE says there ought to be 1,000. So when we're now going to draw a number from 1 to 1,000, we're drawing from the number of pieces of paper that we ought to have. And if we get ballot number 17, we go to the ballot manifest and say, this is the 17th CVR that contains the contest. Let's go find the corresponding piece of paper. But if we get ballot number 917, we don't know where that piece of paper is. It's unaccounted for according to the cast vote records. So we pretend that we have gone to find a piece. This is the zombie. It's an undead ballot. And we basically pretend that a manual inspection of that ballot would have shown the worst possible thing, namely a vote for every loser, because that would decrease our confidence in the outcome by the largest amount.
Hey, Philip, this
is Jennifer.
So we're
using the ballot manifest for ballots we have a cast vote record for, and we're using the grave for ballots that we don't have a cast vote record for.
Let me throw one more thing in for you to think about. If we're talking about focusing on the contest versus the number of ballots, what do we do in a situation where we have multiple cards? So we've given them credit for returning that full ballot, but in reality, that voter's only returned one of the cards, or in a three-card ballot, maybe two of those cards. So we're missing some of those contests.
So that's exactly the situation where the number of cast vote records that contain the contest would be less than what SCORE says. So that's exactly what this will deal with.
Well, I would certainly hope that for the unaffiliated voters, and this is, I guess, why we have the SCORE expert here and all you folks that really know the data, if I get an unaffiliated ballot, a pair of ballots, having not declared anything, and I return, you know, party A, I hope that you actually track that and give me credit for party A, but don't give me credit for party B because I didn't actually return that ballot. You didn't count that ballot. And it would, you know, that would, those would probably be significant numbers of, you know, zombies, which would make the audit much less efficient.
This is Harvey Brandt. One of the issues here is whether SCORE actually knows the actual style of ballot that was returned. And in the case of the primary, it's required to do so. In the case of, in the case of unaffiliated returned, specific cases of unaffiliated returns of ballots, it's required to do so, but not in the case of the generic ballot return. Also, SCORE only knows the correct address, the current address for the voter, but it may not actually lead to the style that was in the outgoing envelope and was actually returned.
Right.
If I'm correct.
So, first of all, just answer Harvey. SCORE, in a great world, always knows which ballot style any voter has returned, and SCORE also knows all the contests on any ballot style that a voter could return. So, you know, an unaffiliated voter is going to get both major party ballots. They're permitted to return one, and the county is to record the party ballot that they returned. For affiliated voters, that is more of an automated process, but SCORE, you know, in a perfect world, would know that with zero discrepancies. I think the issue that you're talking about, Harvey, that does present some complexity is the first ballot back rule.
My understanding is SCORE, most counties, or SCORE is barcode reading the outer envelope, the return envelope, and that has style information on it and has address information on it. So it may not be the same address that the voter actually is currently at the time it arrives. And I understand Boulder actually has a system for correcting for that, using programming of Bell and Howell sorter. But I think that's unusual. So in any case, the perfect world you describe really doesn't exist. So the question is, how imperfect is it? And is it still perfect enough that it satisfies Phillip's requirements for confirming between SCORE and the CPR? But that's, I don't think you should spend a lot of time on what I'm introducing here, but I'm just putting it in just as a side note.
Well, I guess it suffices to say that the issue that you've raised is another source of discrepancy between SCORE data and CVR data. And so whatever method we adopt for conducting the RLA needs also to accommodate that possible discrepancy. But I believe...
I 100% agree.
I believe the methodology that Philip and Ron and Neil are proposing does that because, you know, if we randomly select a ballot that should not exist but for the discrepancy, then we just treat that as a ballot cast for the losing candidate with the highest number of votes, and we go on. You know, it may result in additional rounds. It may result in a larger sampling for the first round to begin with. But ultimately, those discrepancies do not destroy the ability to conduct a risk-limiting audit.
Yes, I think that's correct. And it depends on estimating the the extent of the errors that are related to the things I'm mentioning, in addition to the one you mentioned, which is property owner ballots.
Yeah, and that's same problem, different source, though. So
maybe it will also help to add an alternate way of doing this that would not contribute to any additional rounds, because there would never be discrepancies. The other thing you can do in Philip's example, if you have, you know, if SCORE is saying, gosh, we gave 1,000 people credit for voting in the mayor race, and I guess mayor isn't the primary contest, but, you know, in the race, and there are only 900 CVRs that show that race on it. Again, we're not actually assuming that there's a problem with the election in terms of 1,000 or 100 ballots floating out there actually unaccounted for. What we're just saying is we can't, you know, from the statistical standpoint, we can't assume that all the paper is. Let me skip that for a second. So the other thing you can do is say if the margin in the contest was 400 ballots, you can subtract the 100 unaccounted for SCORE bits of information from the 400 and assume that the margin is and have a reduced margin of 300 ballots and do all your calculations based on that. That's really doing exactly the same thing. It's assuming that all those 100 ballots had voters for the losers.
That's conservative, but it leads to more auditing than the zombie approach, because the zombie approach, you only need to treat those ballots as if they're votes for the loser if you happen to sample them in the audit.
Right.
So that just tends to reduce the auditing burden compared to off the top, assuming that they're all votes for the losers.
Yeah,
that,
I just
that,
wanted
that
to kind of
the whole advantage of the method.
Sure. Clarify a different way of looking at it, and the advantage of this one, if it has one, is that you wouldn't show discrepancies and you wouldn't go to a second round. And if going to multiple rounds is a complicated thing, depending on how much work can be done in the software, that might be helpful. So, just wanted to throw it out.
This is Ron. If I could add a comment. So the auditing of contests where you might have these zombies is an interesting one, particularly when you have multiple contests. And so the sampling events need to be coordinated between the different contests. And so when you draw a sample, you can say which population is being drawn from and what contest is it relevant to. In contests where you might have zombies, you have a sort of a two-part sampling process. You're drawing from some pile of paper ballots. And if you happen to draw from them, you might be actually doing something that's relevant to a number of audits with different contests, even the opportunistic ones. If you're drawing from the zombies, that may just be a set of zombies for a particular contest, and it may be as if nothing had happened for these other contests. So there's a little bit of detail there as to how the zombies get handled with respect to multiple contests, but I think that can be managed, and this is one way of thinking about it.
So I'd just like to make a suggestion. I think this is a good conversation, and I can see some merit in what's being suggested, but I almost wondered, and this is more to Dwight, if we ought to table this. I think there's some more work that we need to do with counties just in balancing to SCORE. So I think to introduce this at this point might be a little bit premature, and it might be our time might be better spent focusing on the primary issue. I think there's a lot, and appreciate the academics, but there is a lot more to that balancing part in SCORE than we've mentioned or have time to discuss here today, just from an administrative perspective.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that. And I'm just, the whole point is simply to try to avoid, try to make the audit more efficient. So if you're trying to audit a contest that only has a third of the ballots have, let's say, the Democratic contest, and if we don't use something like SCORE to only focus on the ones that pretty much are expected to have the contest, then you do three times as much auditing. So.
Right. And I think there's merit in continuing it, the conversation, right? I think there's merit in continuing to look at how we use SCORE in conjunction with our voting system, how we make the two balance. I just think there's still some work to be done on the county level before we jump into implementing it for the RLA and as part of the RLA tool.
So
the issue is simply that if we do, that's the only way that we can focus the sample on just the ballots that contain the contest in question. So to pile on what Neil was saying, if we don't deal with this now, then for the sake of argument, if the Secretary of State decides to audit one of the primary contests that is only on 25% of the ballots in the county, the sample will be drawn from all the ballots in the county, and you'll end up having to pull four times as many ballots as you would if we could focus the sample on just the ballots that contain the contest. And the
even
only
if
way
we
can do that
sample multiple contests?
Yeah.
So let me follow. This is the issue that I just wanted to follow up. So the need for the SCORE data exists if we are basically reducing the sample size to ballot styles that contain that contest. Okay. So I think Philip broached this very briefly earlier on, but what if we don't do that? What if the secretary, let's assume we just have Republican and Democratic ballots in this primary. What if the secretary selects a statewide Democratic contest, a statewide Republican contest, and then a, you know, at least a countywide contest in each county for each of those parties? So basically, whatever ballot is randomly selected is going to contain one of those audited contests, and in every event, two of those audited contests, right?
Yes.
And that obviates the need for the SCORE data.
And this is Amber. The only thing I would say, we don't have a countywide, so we have to talk about that because we don't have any. We don't run any countywide primaries.
But you have nothing below state level.
We have state level, and then we have House District, Senate District. We just don't have a countywide.
But it's all contest certified by the state.
Right. But I think the only other thing I was going to say on the discrepancy thing, and I agree with Jennifer. I think we need to go back. I know we have a lot of this data by precinct, by primary, by coordinate, you know, all the different elections. And we know, I think, the universe of how many of these things we're talking about because it is first ballot back. But it's also, and we've had this happen actually with the tablets or even voting, if someone leaves the site and takes it and throws it away or whatever. I mean, we have
You're
these
off.
Where we've recorded them as voting, right?
Right.
But we know about those things from audit logs and things like that. I think we just have to account for it. But I agree. I think if we can do what you just said, I mean, it seems like we have that issue covered more appropriately than what we were just saying about.
I agree. And Dwight, that makes sense to me. If we're just doing statewide contests and countywide contests, then I think that approach basically gives you an audit, opportunistically at least, but really an audit of everything. And if you have contests that are of similar margin, then you haven't wasted much effort. And it's never a waste of effort, really, to audit more contests. It's just a little bit more than you'd need to meet a particular risk limit. The hardest part, and one of the reasons that we focused on this back at the end of the in the discussion after the audit in Arapahoe County in November, is for districts. If you're trying to audit a district contest, and maybe you're just not trying to step up to that right now, but districts are typically going to have much smaller footprints in sometimes multiple counties. And if you had to audit sample from all the ballots in all the counties that had any ballots that touched a particular district, that becomes a pretty big sample to dilute your margins by.
Hey, Dwight, this is Hillary. I just want to weigh in on that. I really hope we can find a way to not use score for this primary as one of the points of validation, because between the stuff that we already know occurs and the timing of giving what valid and unaffiliated voted, I just think we're prone for errors there, even with some contingency planning.
This is Mark. Are we prone for big errors here? Just an honest question. It's not unlikely that the margins will work out such that there will be quite a bit of wasted effort, or as Neil said, not necessarily wasted. But, you know, we did pick this up because we were trying to save you all some work. So I'm just trying to understand, is this anxiety regarding what you might anticipate to be relatively small discrepancies? Are you just really afraid that is it closer to this whole thing might melt down because the score data just will not be in shape? For instance, the issue you mentioned about unaffiliated voters. You know, I don't have a feel for it.
I don't think it's an either or. So I don't think it's an either or. I think it's somewhere on that continuum. The other thing that from the last version of rules that I saw, while we do have to record which ballot the unaffiliated returned, it didn't indicate the timing of that. And I don't know if all counties were planning on that being a during processing process for the unaffiliated or if that's post. So that, you know, are they going to use the envelope and then go back and mark, you know, like they'd mark the envelope and then have a post process where they'd go back and then assign that to the unaffiliated voter. So I think those are also part of why I would say if we could figure out a way to not have to use score, like what Dwight just suggested, I would be in favor of that, especially for this first time through on a complicated primary.
Thanks, Hillary. Those are really good observations. And the one thing, just in responding to Mark, everybody on this call, at least from the county and state side, basically, we've all been doing this a while, and I think I'll just speak for myself. I hate to predict anything the first time that we're doing it in the state, you know? And this is the first time unaffiliated voters can basically declare a preference and vote in the primary. We're still developing the score functionality to be able to handle that. And so I think Hillary's comments are really sound, and if we can obviate the need for score data by the manner in which the secretary selects the contests and then pull from the whole, we don't have to have software that PR file to see what particular ballot style. I think at least for this year, that's probably the best solution. But in that regard, I have another question. So let's assume the secretary selects a statewide, countywide contest on the ballots of, let's assume there are two participating parties. Give me one sec. Let me just finish this question.
Okay.
How do we have the county audit board report the voter markings? In other words, assuming we can make a change to the RLA software, suddenly does the, you know, the page that is returned to the county audit board where they replicate the voter markings. Well, I guess it's exactly the same as it was before because the software was looking at the CVR, to present the audit board with the contests and choices from that particular ballot. So that wouldn't exactly change, right, Neil?
Exactly. I mean, primaries and geographical separation, as Philip was touching on earlier, they're the same thing. Some CVRs have some contests, some have different contests. If you select, really, in this case, with much less change to the software for the primary where the time crunch is so large, you don't really have anything different.
At least from the county audit board perspective. They'll be presented with a page that contains all of the contests and all of the choices that corresponds to the piece of paper they should be looking at, right?
Right.
But I thought the tool, sorry, this is Jennifer, I thought the tool already was set up to isolate a particular contest, because in November I did not have a countywide issue. So somehow the ballots that were selected for us to audit were all from one particular contest.
Right, and you audited about twice as many as you would have needed to if we had been able to use score data to limit to avoid diluting the margin by 93,000 ballots instead of only the 39,000 that were in that contest.
No, you...
I want to draw a distinction, because I think this is part of the confusion. The difference between a statewide office and a statewide contest, for the sake of argument, the Republican primary for governor is a contest for statewide office, but it is not a statewide contest because it does not appear on every ballot in the state.
But, Philip, that distinction makes no sense to me. A Democratic governor cannot appear on a Republican ballot, and that doesn't make the contest any less statewide.
Yeah, it does, because, this is a matter of definition, but for the purpose of auditing, a contest is statewide if it's on every ballot. It has nothing to do with whether the office is a statewide office. It has to do with whether it's statewide with respect to the ballots it appears on.
We need to make that clear, but I think you can't take over the term statewide.
And fine. I get that. I understand that for the diluted margin, but I think the important thing here is there are no statewide contests in a primary election. Eligible voter in my county is going to see, and so I think we need to just stick that aside, and that's why I think what Dwight was suggesting for a primary probably is the most ideal at this point, is selecting two contests from each party, irrespective if they're the same office, and auditing those.
Yeah,
yes.
Jennifer, what did you mean by...
Maybe we can call it manifest-wide.
Jennifer, what do you mean by irrespective if they're the same office? So, meaning you might pick attorney general for one party and governor for another based on margin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Just making sure. We have a lot of moving parts. Thanks.
Yeah, and maybe, I'm sorry to overlap with that comment. So maybe the term manifest-wide can mean appears on all ballots or something. We need a different term, because I don't think we can redefine statewide, but it's an important distinction to make.
Okay, I understand. So,
This is Mark. I just want to sort of circle back, sort of acknowledge my question was answered, and I accept that, and I think that the novelty of unaffiliated voters perhaps hadn't sufficiently penetrated our collective consciousness, but also, this is, something we contemplated. Hey, there's even a footnote in the write-up, footnote one on page two. We already envisaged that if this doesn't get solved for June, the Republic will survive. And
this is Philip again. I don't remember whether it was Hillary or Amber who point out the complication with respect to score and not wanting to take that on for the June primaries. And I just want to say that if there are going to be modifications to the RLA tool, it should be taken into account that eventually we're going to need to incorporate score data, or we will not have a way to audit smaller contests efficiently or district-wide contests efficiently. So it's functionality that eventually is going to be needed. And so nothing should be written that makes that harder.
That I agree with, certainly.
Give me 1 second.
And Philip, I think also to that point would be how we use score, not only for if someone got a different district style, but also how the use of score can help us with the number of cards in a multi-card election, that not every person, not every voter in that county gets the same number of cards.
Very important.
Okay.
Which, dear God, let's not hope have that hope that happens in a primary.
All right. I'm sorry. I just wanted to scroll through the rest of this.
Dwight, it sounded like you were asking a question as to what could be done in the absence of score data. So if we had a audit procedure which could sample randomly from collections of ballots at each county, possibly at different rates or possibly at the same rate, now what kind of audit would that be? And you certainly could do that, and you could do risk measurement of the contests that you see, and that would be interesting. The question is, how close could you get to actually doing a risk-limiting audit where you could control by appropriate sampling the risk down to the levels that you'd like to see? It may actually be the case that we could do pretty well, but that would depend on the data.
But if we're not limiting the initial sample size at all to simply randomly select ballots of a style that contain particular contests, that's not a concern, is it, Ron?
I'm not sure what's not a concern.
The contest might not appear on every ballot. Dwight is saying if they just use as the denominator in the diluted margin all the ballots, then there's no problem. It should work.
Yeah, you can do the math.
Okay.
I love the phrase.
And all the ballots.
But I just want to say I love the phrase that Philip used in one of his emails or somewhere, saying, you know, there's logistics and there's statistics. And I think separating our discussion to those two parts is quite helpful. The logistics involved in how you organize the ballots and how you do the sampling and get at the ballots, and this is the score data and so on, too. You know, the math, the statistics is, you know, how do you deal with that data and measure your risk? And those are fairly separable. I think it's a nice conceptual framework.
Okay, I understand. All right. Why don't we do this? Let's conclude with this document, and then what I'd like to do is take a look at the comments relating to the software development needs. But before we do that, why don't we take about a 10-minute break? Actually, let's make it 5 minutes. And we'll just leave the webinar up, the conference call going, and we're just going to be on a 5-minute break here.
Dwight, let me ask, can you hear me on this telephone? This is John McCarthy.
Yes.
Great. Okay. So I'll be able to. Thank you.
You bet.
I need the break. See you in 5 minutes.
Okay. This is Dwight Shulman again at the Secretary of State's office. Why don't we go ahead and get started and now talk about the development needs and requirements for the existing RLA software. Again, we have extensive written comments from John McCarthy of Verified Voting and the State Audit Working Group, or SOG, a new acronym. we love our acronyms. So in our debriefing with the counties, we captured a lot of their feedback regarding their experience with the existing software and enhancements they would like to see. I apologize, I did not get a summary of those comments posted before today's meeting. I will do that in the next few days. But generally, I think it's fair to say that they are primarily user interface issues and not really functional issues of the tool. The biggest functional issue that was identified by the counties was if the secretary selects as an audited contest, a contest with a pretty close diluted margin, they're, you know, obviously going to be looking at potentially having to examine a large number of ballots. The current software permits one audit board per county to work at a time, and that may not be sufficient in the future. So the request was made to be able to accommodate multiple audit boards in a particular county working simultaneously. And I think that was, generally speaking, the one big functional issue that was identified by the counties. But again, I'll get the summary of those comments posted, just so everybody is aware what the counties thought. So I think we've addressed, at least, you know, subject to the secretary's approval, the issue of how to conduct the primary election. And so just to recap the development that is really necessary in order to be able to use the tool for the primary election, the one big development item is to basically select, and I'll use Phillips terminology, a statewide office and randomly pull ballots from the entire state rather than from within each individual county.
Oh, am I still on the call?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just scrolling through this.
Dwight, this is Ron. Just a remark. I mean, a random sample across the state can be viewed as some allocation of random ballots chosen from each county, so that this can be viewed either way. I think the way you're saying it is a random trace across the state is the simplest, but in terms of implementation, you might actually say, well, if we do that, then we're actually allocating, you know, 14 ballots from Denver County and 29 from Arapaho or whatever, and if we see that way. So there's a way, different ways of thinking about how to do that.
This is Philip, but it actually matters whether, if you're going to draw 100 ballots from a contest, you draw 50 from County A and 50 from County B, or you draw 100 from the contest. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. The distribution has to be done probabilistically as to how you allocate between the different counties. That's correct. Right.
So one of the challenges, this is Neil again, one of the challenges obviously is the tight time constraints even for June. And let me just start from one perspective, which is that if you're auditing a bunch of county contests, you're going to be looking at a lot of ballots. And it would be possible to export data from those individual county audits, just select at the county level, report that data, and then look and see if one or more state contests had their risk limit satisfied. And unless the state contest has a much, much narrower margin than some of the big counties, let's say, it's quite possible that the work is kind of already done. So if it is, it's a pretty big lift to do the selection and calculations by county. One approach would be to focus on the state, on the countywide contest, and then via exports and external software, essentially say, did we meet the limit for the statewide, and might it be just necessary to inform a couple counties that they need to do a little more auditing in a way that would be much easier to implement in the software? I just want to kind of start from we couldn't do much?
That doesn't quite work, though, because if you're sampling independently from the different counties, you have a stratified random sample, whereas if you sample from the state, you have an unstratified. The statistics is actually different.
You still have the benefit of scale.
Right, but you can't just plug the numbers into the same formula to see whether you've satisfied the risk limit for a statewide contest because the sample is drawn in a different way.
Absolutely. My point is that you have the advantage of scale and the advantage of not having to write a lot of clever sampling and new methods. You can kind of outsource the results for calculations, which are indeed both less efficient and more complicated for the statewide contest.
Yeah, so the risk would, I agree with you, the risk would need to be calculated in a different way. That's my only point.
Exactly.
So I'm just trying to think this through. So ideally, the software should permit the state to select a statewide office on, you know, of each, in a primary, of each participating party, and then within each county, select a countywide office on each participating party's ballot. No matter which contest, every countywide contest on a party ballot will appear on every ballot that has the state office contest. I'm trying to wrap my head around the random selection of ballots statewide for a state office and within each county for a countywide office. And
Dwight, I think you had it right in one of your emails. I think what you said there is what the kind of this process that Philip and Neil and I have talked about as well. And let me just rephrase what you said, which is that if you have a mental process for taking all of the ballots in the state and imagining that they were in some order defined by some pseudo-random generator or some other process, but in any case, there's a global list of all the ballots in the state, and so you've got the first ballot in the state, the second ballot in the state. When you're doing the state, and so on, when you're doing the statewide audit, you're just saying, I want the first 111 ballots out of that list, and the lists for the counties are really filtered versions of that. I mean, so that takes care of the statewide audit. When you want to do a countywide thing, you're just saying, well, let's take the same list and let's just filter it for those ballots that are in this county. And so out of that list of 3 million or whatever, we'll take the 100,000 that correspond to this county. And so it's the same ordering within the list. It's just a filtering. And so you can say, well, I want the first 50 ballots that are in that list. So each county can say, I'm going to sample the first 50 there. And so when you're doing the statewide audit and the countywide audit, you're just coordinating this process of looking at ballots according to the same global list. And from the statewide audit's point of view, you want to make sure you've looked at a prefix of that, an initial segment of that, and examined all the ballots that are in that. And from the county point of view, you want to say, my filtered list, I want to also the first so many out of that list. And because they're drawn from the same list, you have a lot of possibilities for synergy there. But each countywide audit and then the whole statewide audit has the right structure. It's just taking a random ordering of the ballots and looking at an initial segment of those ballots.
So basically what the RLA tool needs to do is have a way of concatenating all the ballot manifests from all the counties together and saying, I want ballot number, 52,917, and the lookup table says, oh, that's Boulder County's ballot number such and such, and then Boulder County knows where to go to find it.
Right.
Right. I mean, that would be the normal way to do it. Just to clarify, as we've discussed in some previous calls, currently the software is actually sampling from the CVRs explicitly and solely, and it assumes that another check has been made that the manifest matches the CVRs. So in order to use the existing software, that would imply, one big, huge CVR file, which at least conceptually, and can obviously be done internally by being more clever about it. My comment was before was just meant to say, even if we did nothing really to the software at all, but just reported on the results at the county level, including the opportunistic results, which have a nice uniform sample across both the counties and the whole state, with the exception of the CVR counties, non-CVR counties, which we'll have to get to, but they're kind of small. It would likely be the case that there wouldn't be a whole lot of extra auditing, and maybe just a little bit in this county or that, and a pretty simple change to the software to say, just let us do more auditing, don't ask us why,
Well, except that, from what Ron just described and Philip just described of the concatenated ballot manifest or CVR, the software will essentially take the data uploaded by the counties and using the random seed create a single list of completely random every ballot in the state. And then the software will determine through the lookup table saying, ballot 1, 1,025, 6,045, those belong to Boulder County, so those are the first ballots that Boulder County must audit, and so on down the line. But ultimately in determining the number of ballots that each county should audit really will, I think, should depend on whether the diluted margin of the state office contests are closer than the diluted margin of the county-wide contest in that county, right? the closer margin should drive the audit within that county.
Well, sort of. Another way to think of this is that you do it in stages, at least conceptually. I'm not saying that logistically you do it this way, but you imagine drawing from the state as a whole for the statewide contests. And that might result in, I'm picking on Boulder County, but Boulder County looking at 80 ballots. And now it knows that it can rely on those 80 ballots to audit any countywide contests as well. But if the countywide diluted margin is smaller, that sample will need to be augmented by more ballots.
So right, and I just want
a first stage that's statewide, and then you focus in on smaller and smaller pieces of geography, which might or might not already have a large enough sample drawn from them, or at least expect to have had a large enough sample, depending on the assumption that the audit doesn't find any issues.
Okay. Yeah, and I just want to emphasize that a statewide audit is far more efficient for, at least with some of the calculation sampling size methods that we have, or risk level estimates we have, far more efficient to sample to audit a statewide race, because if you could just do a simple statewide sample, you would be auditing the same number of ballots across the whole state instead of in a single county for the same margin. So
right.
If we do a stratified sample, it gets more complicated in various ways. But my notion springs from the fact that that it's often the case that you'll just get a whole lot of evidence from around the state opportunistically and might not need to augment that with a whole lot more to via some external means to say, you know, did we or did we not satisfy the statewide limit without a lot of software modification.
As Harvey Branscombe, the model that Philip Stark just mentioned, the one that I've been leaning towards, going statewide sample first and then looking to augment in specific counties, that's the direction I've been thinking of.
It makes the statistical calculations easiest. Also, just to back up slightly in the conversation, Neil said that the sample is actually being drawn from the CVRs, and conceptually that's not the way to go. Conceptually, the sample should be drawn from the manifest, and then the corresponding CVR should be looked up if they exist, and if they don't, you have a zombie issue.
Yeah, the problem with sampling from the manifest is if there is a zombie issue, you don't kind of know what style to... If there's something that is, it's harder to deal with mismatches. So if you sample from the CVRs, you always know what it is to populate the user interface with, and you don't have to essentially show people all possible contests and have them look through.
But Neil, if we're sampling from the CVRs, why in the world are we requiring the counties to independently maintain a ballot manifest?
Well, it's exactly the same thing as we've talked about with SCORE. So we need somewhere a count of paper. We need somewhere an assurance that somebody actually knows how many pieces of paper there are and that number is not different than the number of CVRs that we have. That's the full purpose of it. I mean, we originally wanted to sample by manifest, and we expect to in some situations in the future, but that's just how the process developed in the push last summer and fall.
Okay.
It's still very, very valuable work for people to count the paper and put the manifest together and confirm that it's the same as the CVR. So it's by no means deprecating that work or the importance of it. And if they match, and they matched in all cases last year, then there's no difference.
Okay, well, I'm... So fundamentally, the fundamental development issue we have is for the existing software, for the state to be able to select a statewide office, and then the software randomly select ballots from around the state, not within each county or treating each county as a silo. I mean, fundamentally, yeah, so the
Let me just jump in and support the way that both Philip and then Harvey described. So, and it would also be pretty straightforward in the software. If we just had went back to the idea that we were floating last fall or last spring of having kind of a minimum audit per county, being able to specify somehow a minimum amount of auditing to do, we could actually, again, maybe even be an external procedure, calculate and a small addition to the software, we could calculate a minimum based on a statewide contest and basically just say everybody's got to audit at least this many, and that'll be, you know, one way of getting a sample size. And then if we need to augment it for a local contest, we can augment it. And we would probably have to augment it in most cases unless there were really, really wide margins. But that does, I think, both simplify it conceptually and is still probably pretty straightforward.
So here's my concern, Neil, is counties have to give us their data on the ninth day after the election. We've got to start the statewide audit the morning of the 10th day after the election. I'm pretty much over working all night. But seriously, what I mean is we have very little time to obtain, collate, and utilize the data provided by the counties. And I personally am very concerned that we at the state do not have sufficient time to augment anything if it's an external process. That's 64 counties.
I think that's not humanly possible. Yeah, no, that's a really important timeline to keep in mind. The nice thing, though, is that on election night, you've pretty much got the margins statewide, and the only thing you need to set minimums per county is the margin in the statewide race and the number of ballots in each county. And you can at that point get a pretty good estimate that, you know, maybe in the fullness of things you need to revise later. I mean, I'm searching for something that is the least amount of most feasible. So I'm just floating something so that at least I have confidence that we have a way to approach it. But it's very important to make sure that that the timeline works. And I think we've got more time to do those calculations than just the night before.
So what about, I just want to throw this out there. What if Secretary Williams revises the existing rule and says the secretary will select at least one statewide office to audit in a primary election from all participating parties, period?
From each or from all?
From either each of the major parties or all participating parties.
Right.
And that's
how does it help?
Because every ballot that is pulled is going to contain the countywide stuff. It's just depending on the margin, we may or may not reach the risk limit, but the existing rule requires the secretary to establish a 5% risk limit for a statewide office, and he can establish a greater risk limit for a countywide office. And so limiting the selection to a statewide office, and I'm not saying permanently, I'm just saying to get us through this primary so that we can conduct a risk-limiting audit, what if we just limit it to a statewide office?
You mean not do any, not drive any audits in local counties by local contest?
Yeah, but when you put it like that, I think I said it better. No, I understand what you're saying.
You really mean ignoring the local contest? Okay.
You're
still
not ignoring
get all
it.
Those local contests. Yeah,
right. You're not ignoring it. You're gonna get reports on those just like the statewide offices. The problem is, not every county may have to look at any ballots under the current rule, and so maybe that's part of a proposed rule revision is. No matter what, every county's got to look at X number of ballots for each participating party. And this rule revision, I'm just spitballing here, pertains really just to primary elections.
I don't think the primary distinction is the primary distinction is important for the rule change. There are two pieces that I hear in your rule change. One is, you know, multiple statewide contests, right? And the other is no local contests driving the audit. And by the way, I'm absolutely agree and am delighted. It's important to consider, you know, we are making all contests subject to audit in some sense. But we've got to report on that in order for that to be helpful. So, you know, that would drastically limit the amount of auditing that was done, which I think would be unfortunate. So having a minimum amount to audit in each county would be a good idea. It's just not clear to me that, so if you do that, how would we implement it? To implement a statewide audit and only even just one statewide audit, the current software would need a single CDR that was like the concatenation and merging of all contests in all counties and do a single selection from that as if it was one big county and figure out from that via a manifest, I guess, which county it was in. So that's possible. It's a pretty big CDR file, but and I'm just trying to process in real time. I think you lose a lot of. I think the other approach, I guess I still like the other approach, but you're right that it has this kind of external dependency.
Well, I guess my only comment would be that we don't know if that would, you know, reduce the amount of auditing or actually, well, it wouldn't increase it, but we don't know. It just depends on the margin of the statewide office that is selected to drive the audit. You know, we don't know if that diluted margin is going to be greater than or lesser than the diluted margin of any countywide contest. That is just based on the outcome of the election, and I don't think it's really knowable in advance. So I'm not proposing this as a way of, you know, artificially limiting or restricting the amount of auditing that counties must do. I'm proposing this as a method of legitimately simplifying the task ahead of us so that we can actually do this in June.
Right. This is Ron. I share the concern that was expressed earlier that if you limit it to just a statewide contest that's driving the audit, that you're going to be cutting way back on the amount of auditing done. Even if the diluted margin is smaller in the statewide contest, the fact that you're spreading that audit over the entire state means that each county is going to have not very much to do, even for a fairly close statewide contest, I suspect. So, you know, you could take the other point of view and say each county is going to audit according to some contest chosen for that county, and then we just see where we end up with the state. instead of doing, as you're suggesting we consider, which is, you know, audit according to a statewide margin and then see where we end up with the counties. So I think having a preference towards a style that emphasizes the greater amount of auditing to be done, more checking, and the kind of work that we're going to be seeing in the general election later on is where I would prefer to see us go.
I also just want to emphasize that you can't just concatenate the CVRs to make this happen. You'd have to, I mean, in between the time that the counties upload the day before the audit starts and the start of the audit processing with the tool, yeah, I mean, you would need to upload in a different way. I guess this thing, depending on whether you change the tool at all, but somehow you'd need to merge all those contests, and you'd end up conceptually with this one big CVR with just all kinds of zero, all kinds of blanks for contests that, you know, appear in one small county but not anywhere else in the state. I'm just trying to figure out how we could, what would be involved in doing that. So it's another time-critical merge or piece of software or something.
That describes what the multi-county issue is, Neil. I think it has to happen sooner or later. It'd be kind of a shame to carve it up and do a little tiny element of it instead of doing it all together.
We're also forgetting the fact that we need to worry about counties that don't have cast vote records. So they don't have a cast vote record to concatenate in that way. My suggestion for how to audit contests that appear in those counties and also in CVR counties is to do batch level comparisons, which means that the selection needs to be from batches. The batches in cast vote record counties are batches of size one. The batches in the non-CVR counties, the legacy counties, are batches of size of a precinct. And so the software would need to be modified to have the notion of a batch rather than just a cast vote record.
I think that's certainly, if we're talking about June, that's a very big lift. I think that is less feasible.
Sorry, why
than the other
why is
approaches.
That a big lift? I mean, don't the cast? I mean, are you? The question really is: does the cast vote record data structure allow things other than blank zero or one in a column?
Well,
and if it allows
it just,
the general.
It goes much deeper than that. My recollection of the proposal, I'm sorry, this is something that came up very late, and so I really haven't reviewed it closely, but I thought you also wanted to do a different kind of sampling, do it proportional to error bound instead of uniform. I mean, those are all big changes. How do you report data from those counties? Right now, we just have checkboxes when people say, you know, enter data for a CVR, and so there would be new user interface element to report on the batches and stuff.
Yep, for those counties, when they, instead of ending data from a single ballot, it would be from having counted the votes in a batch. The sampling with probability proportional to size is, you know, a very straightforward change to the software, and no change to the user interface. If it's not a change to the data structure, if the cast vote records themselves can be generalized to take numbers that are bigger than one, then the rest of it, I mean, there's example code for that kind of thing in a number of places. I know it's not in Java. It's in R and Python. But it, the logic of it isn't that hard. The testing of that would not be terribly difficult, and it doesn't change the user interface.
Well, it does change the user interface for entering the data very significantly.
Yes, in those counties.
And yeah, I my intuition is just that takes things in a direction that complicates things. It's probably valuable at some point. I didn't work on that particular part of the code, so I'd really want to get input from elsewhere. But I kind of like the other approaches. But you're right. I mean, really, the fundamental thing is you're right that 1.7%-ish of the statewide ballots, we're not going to have CVRs, and we have to have a way to deal with that.
So, Philip, you stated that the way to accommodate the non-CVR counties is to basically audit by batch. CVR counties have a batch consisting of one ballot, and non-CVR counties, I think you said, batch by precinct. That doesn't make sense to me.
That's
Colorado.
Probably the easiest way to do it, unless they have electronic results by physical batches that actually exist. The easiest would be if their systems report subtotals for physical collections of ballots, but my understanding is that in general that isn't true. In general, counties process vote-by-mail ballots as they come in, but the software can only report subtotals for geographic regions like precincts rather than for physical batches of ballots that were scanned together.
Oh, we're talking about legacy system counties, right?
Exactly, yeah.
I think that's generally correct, yeah. Because our Dominion representative here was shaking his head pretty furiously, but we're not talking about him. Well,
gathering the data for the batches is certainly a big challenge, and it either requires finding the paper corresponding to the precinct reports or providing data by batch. And I haven't looked in detail at what counties they are and how many ballots they expect and so on. It might be okay, but this is what we kind of waited for the new equipment for when doing comparison audits. So.
How many ballots are we talking about here for the ballot polling? County terms of ballot polling, you say it's 2% or less?
It's 1.6.
Another approach is to do a transitive audit where you rescan them, bring all the ballots somewhere and rescan them or have machinery that rescans them and get per-ballot CVRs. So this would be additional effort for the audit than doing this rescan, but it would allow you to have to not think about the different flavors, the oil and water kind of things you have with the by batch and by ballot things.
There's a bunch of different ways to deal with this. So Ron is right. We could make CVRs for them by rescanning them. We could treat if the RLA tool had the notion of sampling from a manifest instead of sampling from a CVR, then any ballots that are selected from those counties could be treated using the zombie, approach. They basically just count them in the worst way in statewide contests. Or alternatively, their potential influence on the margin could be subtracted off the top, and just treat them as if they're all votes for every loser. And if they come up, so that is the clumsiest approach and will lead to the most auditing. The zombie approach is a little bit less clumsy, but still leads to more auditing than it needs to. Dealing with batch subtotals, if batch subtotals can be exported from their voting systems, is probably, in my mind, the most elegant approach because it makes the whole audit process uniform. Everything is, completely rigorous statistically, and the sampling is still top down. And then my least favorite approaches involve stratification and partitioning things into ballot polling and ballot level comparison audits, and that loses a fair amount of statistical power. So I think that it gains a lot of complexity in the calculation. So that's my least favorite approach.
And another approach is kind of a Bayesian approach that looks at, that is able to combine the ballot polling with the.
Well, but that's also, first of all, it's not risk limiting in the sense in which that's understood. And secondly, that's also quite complex computationally, would require additional software and so forth. So I don't currently see that as having an advantage over a frequentist approach that uses stratification.
Well, if we're talking about starting from an audit of the counties and then looking to see whether that matches the statewide results, or really trying to design the audit from a statewide approach based on just reported numbers and providing minimum numbers to counties such that the statewide audit is at least probably confirmed if there aren't discrepancies. And, of course, you have to deal with discrepancies if a bunch of those pile up. That can be done via existing external software and approaches, which is much less rigorous, but freely available in a lot of cases. It's just much harder to put all of this in a tool that is...
I mean, at some point, needs to have the notion of sampling from a contest, not sampling from a county. I mean, that just needs to happen sometime. And
yes. Right. But that can be external, is kind of the point that I'm...
No, sampling from a contest can be external? That how's that? You're not going to use the RLA tool to draw the sample?
If on election day plus one, based on election night reporting results, we use an external tool to say, here's a contest we want to focus on, here's how many you would need minimum in each county, let's just have a simple change to the software, a very simple change that says minimum for each county is this much. And if then the rest of the stuff, hold on just a second. Let me run through the whole thing.
But it's a different sample design, Neil. You're talking about a stratified sample rather than an unstratified sample. It changes everything.
Well, let me just run through it. So if you do this, design it at the statewide level, come up with some minimum numbers, do everything else the normal way. We're auditing county contests. We're getting discrepancies for them. We also report discrepancies as the software does for the opportunistic contest. The state contest would be entered into software as opportunistic, but we would report those discrepancies. Those discrepancies could go back into the same, I'll continue to say, since I understand it and it's out there and it's efficient, Bayesian approach, which normally has numbers that are pretty well match the frequentist in my approach, in my notion. And I know that the definitions are squirrely, but I'm just trying to describe
we could do that. But look, Neil, I mean, I don't understand what you're trying to do. If you're going to rely on external software to calculate the attained risk based on a stratified sample, that can be done using a frequentist approach also. And without changing the definition of what a risk limiting audit is. But the point is that eventually Colorado needs to be able to sample from contests. And eventually the RLA tool needs to understand that contests are a primary entity and can cross county lines. And
yeah, I'm only talking about this sampling. June primary, which we don't have time to do as much work as we'd like.
Let me this is John McCarthy. Let me jump in here. I've been fairly quiet.
Hey, John.
I think we're getting...
John, can you speak up?
Yes.
It's a little hard to hear you.
Oh, okay. Is this any better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sure. I think we're getting too distracted by the June primary. It, certainly some of the stuff that I've written is on behalf of the group says, yes, we absolutely have to make contests full entities and sample from contests, not just from the counties. But let's think about this in terms of the software. Now, hopefully, and maybe Dwight can say what he thinks the timelines might be in terms of. It looks like the request for information process winds up at the end of January. Then how long would an RFP take? When would you actually have money in hand that could be used to make any modifications to the existing software? My guess is going to be pretty close to June, and we're going to be into the same kind of fire drill that people would rather not repeat from last fall. So maybe what we should do is focus on what can be done with the existing software, no modifications, for the June primary, and then what modifications need to be made in order to carry out the general election.
So let me just answer your question. Well, actually not answer your question. I don't know what the timeline is. In my mind, we would like to start the development in March. I do not know if that's possible. There's a lot of different procurement methods available, and the money is a big issue. If in response to the RFI we get just astronomical numbers, then we may have to go back to the legislature. I don't know how long that takes. So ultimately, I just have to say I don't know when development can start. That said, I do think it is very valuable to consider whether we can do the primary with the existing software somehow, and as John suggests, really dive down into the kind of deeper, fundamental, structural things that need to be done to the software in order to do the general election in November. And at least what I've heard thus far, and based on the comments that I've read both in the statistical document and the software development document, I don't think unless we do some kind of external manual augmentation process, the existing software will not select or statewide office. We have to basically treat each county as a silo, and from all the comments I've read, that's not an acceptable solution, certainly in the long term. I don't know if there's something that we can do to make that an acceptable solution for the primary and get through the primary and then concentrate our development discussions for the general.
Well, this is Ron. A couple of comments. So in terms of the primaries and moving forward, I mean, one thing that we mentioned in our memo that's just worth repeating here is that you need to have cognizance of the statewide contest. They all need to be named the same way. The candidates need to be named uniformly across all of this. So even if you persist in using the same software for going forward, a bit, somehow there has to be some management external to the software in terms of naming and just having a concept of a statewide contest at all and having different counties reporting on it. Step two is that I think that you can perhaps separate out the risk measurement from the management side a bit, modulates. So one question ask is, you know, given what we've done so far with sampling, perhaps with the old tool, perhaps with new tools, and whatever, given a set of ballots that have been drawn and examined by hand in the various counties, and given the sampling regimes that were used for them, which could be uniform across the state or could be somehow stratified, and whatever it's done, you need a tool that says, can we come up with a risk measurement for all of the contests that are either audited, either as the driving contests or the opportunistic ones? For the purpose of risk measurement, it doesn't matter whether they're driving or opportunistic. You just got some sample data, you got the contest, and you say, what is the risk measure there? And then you got the question of management. How do I do additional sampling or even the initial sampling in such a way that the risk measurement turns out to be as efficient as possible? And that is kind of a separate issue. So I think just there's a nice math module there that says, well, let's take the sample data we have. Let's measure the risks in all the contests. Can we just do that? And then the question is, how do we draw ballots in such a way that the risk measurement works well? And we just get to the point of having all the contests below the risk limits.
This is Harvey France. On the naming issue, I think the risk-limiting audit advocates have been totally shocked by the coordinated election. The primary election coming up has very consistent naming for all these state-controlled contests. They're all based on precincts. It's a much, much simpler model, so the naming issue really isn't going to be a problem in this particular election, I believe. And another idea I was thinking of moving towards was treating the entire state as a county in the software tool. And indeed, if it was possible for there to be multiple teams working, you could have each county be a team or multiple teams. But unfortunately, we don't have that. So perhaps multiple instances of running the tool so that each county is actually entering for the state sample. But anyway, that's what I wanted to contribute.
That's actually a really important point. Just to stick with that last point that Harvey made briefly, if we tried to, like, merge all the CVRs and just do a statewide audit with the existing software only allows each, quote-unquote, well, each jurisdiction, county, in the last election, but in this case the state, to be entering data once. And so we wouldn't be able to have 64 counties enter in parallel or 50 or whatever. So that would definitely be a challenge. So this is kind of why I advocate doing it from the county level. I'm back to advocating from the county level and measuring at the state level, and then, as Ron says, having some simple tools to manage that to get to the level you want. Go ahead.
There is no way to do the audit with only the RLA tool as it currently exists. It just can't. If you use the RLA tool as it currently exists to draw the sample, then it cannot calculate the attained risk limits, and the risk needs to be calculated with something external. If you use the current RLA tool as it exists to draw the sample, then the amount of sampling that is going to be required is going to be substantially larger because it's drawing a stratified sample instead of an unstratified sample, and the risk calculations lead to larger samples. So sticking with the tool, and if you try to use it in sort of single county mode, then you have the problem that only one county at a time can enter data. So there is just no way around needing to alter the software or augment it with something. And if you try to do it by augmenting it with external risk calculations, it's going to require substantially more auditing to get the same attained risk levels.
Well, the way that I would frame it, Dwight proposed a change to the rule. I'll propose kind of a different change to the rule. Instead of only driving from the state level, so Dwight proposed only driving the audit from the state level, I would propose only driving the audit from the county level and from an external lever, a very, very simple change to the software that basically just says, I'd like this county to continue doing some audits and just report. And if you had that single change to the software, and if you drove it from county-level contests, and if you then incorporated somehow via ways that I know how to do in Bayesian methods, and I've heard proposals for how to do it in frequentist methods, the no CVR counties with the external tool. Then I think we can have a situation where we at least guarantee that we did audits in all the counties, and ignoring the fact that, well, I guess it might be, well, and by reporting the opportunistic results to external tools, we can at least measure, and given some tweaking via the management driver that Ron proposed, control, getting additional audits as needed in various counties to meet a statewide contest. So, you know, the conservative approach would be to say we're just auditing locally. We're really hoping to get a great audit of the statewide contest. That's experimental. We'll see if it works out. No pressure. And I think with a very small change to the software, we could accomplish that probably pretty well, given my biases or, you know, belief in Bayesian auditing and with Philip's tools as well, using some of the assumptions that he allowed for earlier.
Giovanni, I certainly appreciate your support on the Bayesian side, Neil, and would be happy to see that used, but it's not clear we need to go there. I think that the framework is primarily frequentist, and if we have the frequentist tools for doing that and they work, that would be fine as well. So I'm not sure the Bayesian frequentist dimension is the key one. The key one here is really how to manage these multi-county things and the question of stratified samples versus non-stratified samples and so on, too. I think Philip said that you sort of need the unstratified samples. I view the statewide sampling as being something you could view as a two-stage thing. You could say, well, let's imagine tossing balls into bins, and the bins are the counties, and that tells us what the allocation is of the statewide sample to the particular county, and then you're doing the sampling within the county to get that requisite number of samples out of that county. So the statewide audit and the percentile thing can be harmonized, I think, in that way.
But Ron, that's still going to require external software. It's not that can't make use of RLA tool as it is.
That's correct. Yeah, some amount of external software is going to be needed. I don't think there's going to be any.
Totally.
I agree with you that the question is what's the minimum amount of external software you need for risk measurement or doing some allocation of the sample or something. That could be done in the risk measurement part. If you just had a new risk measurement piece, you could say, well, all the sampling sizes were determined by counties according to some rule that they were given. Now we can go back and say, well, had that been statewide sampling, but, you know, we may be throwing away some data in the county. Say, you know, you overdid it in this county. We can only look at the first 100 ballots, and you did 200. And so we're getting a little less benefit out if we moderated that. And that would be the penalty you'd pay for not having that statewide coordination level up front. But you could do the risk measurement as if you had done that to sort of say, well, each county has done so much, and this county is sort of setting the threshold for what we can measure in all the counties, and that's just kind of too bad, but that informs us as to how we might do more if we need to take the next step for the audit.
But from a frequency standpoint, and I certainly agree that it would be great if it would work from that standpoint too, we could take all the data on all the ballots that were audited and basically, I don't know, can I use the word de-stratify? I mean, essentially, just throw out all the evidence that was more than required in a given county such that you treat it as if it was a statewide sample, basically, as Ron said, kind of assuming that it all worked out there.
You can't do that. you could. The design is a stratified design. It just is. You can't take a stratified design and treat it as if it weren't drawn in a stratified way. It's not about the sampling rates in the different counties.
So, Philip, I think you can. I mean, I think that if you do a stratified design, each county has its own randomized list of ballots in that county, and the concatenation of those is or whatever the union of those is the list for the state, and a random draw
The probability just doesn't work that way, Ron. I mean, you can do it the other way around. You could say, I'm going to draw a statewide sample, and that resulted in this many ballots from this county. That county can now go draw its own sample independently of that size, that top-down way that way. but you can't have each county draw a fixed size sample and then put them together and consider that to have been a simple random sample.
Yeah, so I want to do the first thing. So under the presumption that the county drew more than the statewide thing would have demanded. And I'm guessing here actually that that's going to be the case, is that the requirements for the county level audits are going to be tougher in each county than the statewide thing, which is spread all over the state. So but let's imagine that the county, you know, because of its own considerations, drew 200 ballots, and the statewide requirement, if we've done it the way you're proposing, which I agree is the right way, said you only need 50 ballots. So the state is coming to the county saying, we need 50 ballots from you. The state county is saying, we did 200 ballots. Well, we're just going to give you the first 50 that we sampled at random, and that will, in fact, meet the requirements of randomness that the statewide thing, had we done it the other way from the beginning, would have gotten, because those 50 ballots would have been the 50 ballots they would have given to the state. So I think we can synergize those viewpoints.
That's what I was trying to say. I think that's a better explanation.
Okay. The folks here in the room from the counties need to get back to work, and I'm sure the people who are joining us on the call do as well. This is what I would like to do. If I could ask anyone collectively, individually, if you could submit your ideas for how we can use the existing software with whatever external bounds that would be required to make it a statistically valid audit, how we can use the existing software for the primary election with minimal or no additional development, and then separately specify the development that we need to do for the general election, that would be very helpful to the secretary and, frankly, to me. I mean, I've listened to the conversation today, but I understand there's alternative theories being bandied about, but I don't know what it means in real terms as far as procurement, software development, expense, and so forth. And if whoever is interested, if you could submit those written comments to me, dwight.shellman@sos.state.co.us, by 5 p.m. 1 week from today, which would be the 12th. Got a lot of mathematicians on the phone. Is that right? I will post those. We'll create a separate row on the table on the RLA page so that these kind of post-meeting comments are segregated, because I want the public to be able to see them, but I'm just not sure that we can dig down into more detail today. And then the other thing that I just wanted to, responding to the software development document that I have up on the screen now, there were some specific recommendations that I just wanted to review very quickly. What page am I on? I'm on page 3 of 3, starting with the additional rules and regulations that be necessary. Number one, the election division needs to establish uniform names and naming conventions for contests and choices. We have the ability to do that outside of rule for CVR counties, comparison audit counties. We can impose that as a condition of use for the voting system. But obviously, I need to check with the counties and the voting system providers to make sure whatever convention we utilize works for everybody. And there's a new complication here. Douglas County is probably going to acquire clear ballot. And when we're talking about shared county races, that will make Douglas County the only county using that voting system. And if it shares with the Dominion County, we just need to make sure those are like cross-compatible, and that'll take a little work. But I think we can do that. Item number two, I guess I frankly don't understand. The existing rule requires the counties to disassociate counting batches from score batches. So I think that we have addressed that issue in the rule. If there's something I'm not understanding, please feel free to include that in your written comments. Number three, we did provide all counties with a any problems with counties uploading those into the RLA tool. So again, if there's something I'm not understanding, please let me know.
Let me just jump in there. I mean, we did promulgate a standard for doing that. The minor issue that would matter more if we were doing more with manifests at some point is that the headers were kind of wildly different if you look at the ones that were uploaded.
But, okay. Thank you, Neil.
I understand. Pretty well.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Number four and five are open issues that we'll have to consider. So I just wanted to review one through three there, because to some extent I think we either have or we fairly easily can address those issues.
Great.
Okay. So why don't we go ahead and conclude, and let me thank the people who really, I know, created written comments very quickly. They are very thoughtful. They are very detailed. I know how much time that takes. I really thank you. I'm sorry we're not able to reach complete resolution today, but we'll all keep muscling along and getting through this as best we can and as quickly as we can. Okay?
Just one thing, Dwight. It seems, John McCarthy again, seems to me that you might want to consider having, after you get these things back next week, which I think is a good way to proceed, you've mentioned a subsequent meeting to address some of the things that Harvey has mentioned, and I think that probably could be a little ways down the line, but it might be helpful to have, if people can stand it, a subsequent meeting pretty soon to just address what things we can agree on have to be modified in the software for the general election, because that's what we didn't really get a chance to do today.
Right. Well, I thought, John, that I requested in these forthcoming written comments that you give us and specify that detail.
Are you right? No, it's just that it really helps to have this kind of verbal going over of things, that it just brings out more stuff, and particularly to winnow out the things that aren't absolutely essential.
Right. Well, I need to go back to my superiors here and talk about setting another one of these meetings. because I do think one more conversation concerning whatever comments we receive in the next week would probably be beneficial. But I need to work through that scheduling.
Sure.
But we will issue a public notice of that. Yeah, Ron.
Thanks, Dwight. I had another question. So you talked about what can be done with the current software and so on, too. I wanted to just ask the following question because it relates to procedures for physically managing the ballots rather than software issues and so on, too, which is the issue of sorting by style and so on. We talked about this at various times. I mean, it would be wonderful and it would help all the software issues and so on, too, if the ballots were magically sorted by style as they came in or something like this. To what extent can that be arranged?
I'll tell you, Ron, I think in a central count context, basically that would require segregating batches by style, I think is what you're talking about.
I'd like to be able to sample from a contest efficiently, and so having all of the ballots together that relate to a particular contest is the goal. Dealing with sparse ballots and a large collection of mail-in ballots is troublesome logistically, and there's different ways of dealing with it. We're bringing the score data and trying to deal with it that way, which is maybe the right way to go. But the other approach, which doesn't involve any software changes, is just to have a bunch of procedures or machines or something that allow the ballots to be sorted out in a useful way as they come in or after they've been.
I honestly think logistically that's virtually impossible. I mean, counties.
Let me just throw out an intermediate thought. If we had just two parties, and if a county wanted a more efficient audit of a single, let's say, party A contest versus party B contest, if one of those was kind of close and they didn't want to dilute by the entire set across both of them, maybe it would be possible to give the party, the county, the option of just having two styles, party A versus party B, segregating their manifests and segregating their CVRs in a pretty mechanical way by that, and I don't know, like showing up as two counties and being able to audit those separately. I mean, that's kind of a direction. Again, it may be more hassle than anybody wants to do, but if that's a concern, that could be done.
So at least for purposes of the primary election, no, that's not true. Never mind. It would certainly be more feasible to create counting batches consisting of particular party ballots as opposed to ballot styles.
Yes, for the primary, that seems to be an interesting direction.
Right. Just a thought to chew on. I know that we want to wrap this up. I just wanted to also just briefly ask how that there's a separate process. The RFI that went out has another meeting on Monday, as I understand it, or you're going to do an exposition or something, and then you're asking for comments, questions, and then you're asking for responses by the 21st. How do these two processes interact? Because that one is pretty strongly focused on the November piece, and I really appreciate how that has came out. So can you just say how these two are coordinated?
Well, here's the problem, Neil. Other people here are driving the RFI. I'm not in charge of that. Ultimately, the telephone conference on Monday is for potentially interested parties to examine and understand the existing code. Hopefully, we will be able to formalize development requirements so that they will understand, you know, what modifications need to be made by when. We're not going to know that Monday. Monday's exercise is to really give interested parties an opportunity to look at and understand the existing code.
And will any of the information from this meeting be shared with folks interested in that, or do you want... So I guess you're just saying that they're really pretty separate things, even though they're both driving towards very common issues in many cases.
Yes, they're both completely separate and totally interdependent. So the bottom line is the best we
can...
Glad
I asked.
The only thing I can say is anything that we do, that's one of the reasons we're conducting this as a public meeting. Anything we discuss here is available to any of those people to the extent it's helpful or not.
Excellent. Yeah, good.
So, you know,
we
will keep making this as public as possible so everybody has all the information that they need.
Perfect. No, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for
your
time. And let's go ahead and conclude today. And I'll look forward to receiving your comments. And if we have another meeting, which I suspect we will, obviously we'll be issuing a public notice on that. So thank you all so much.
Thank you all so much. I know that this is still a whole lot of work, and you're doing an excellent job.
Yes.
Thanks. And I'll just note for
thank you all. Good discussion.